Moncrief on News Talk.
You'll often hear about people going on a digital detox. It implies that going on a break from social media is a healthy choice, but that they will return to it. But just like drinking or gambling, there are people who should give it up completely because they are addicted. And as we know, the algorithms are deliberately designed to foster that addiction. Dr. Nicholas Cardaris has been working on the treatment of tech addiction for the past decade. He's CEO of Omega Recovery. Nicholas, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
The people who come to you for treatment, what kind of age ranges are we talking about?
Yeah, typically they're 17 to 30, 32 years old. We would call them the failure to launch profile. These are typically college age people, young people who have struggled and have essentially fallen into the digital rabbit hole where they can't function anymore and they need to come into residential treatment to get back on track.
Yeah, and those people have recognized themselves there's a problem, I assume.
Well, they often do, but more often than not, it's the family. The family will see it first. Usually the client themselves will think that maybe the problem is a passing issue. Maybe it's the parents overreacting, but typically they have failed out of school. Their social lives have collapsed. I mean, it's a significant issue. It's not a minor behavioral problem where it's you and I might feel a little bit of overly habituated to our phones. These are people whose life functioning has totally been impaired by their addiction to their devices, but they don't always see it.
Yeah. And so are there, and for people listening, they may be wondering about this, are there signs or there are questions you can ask yourself as to whether there isn't a real problem here?
It's similar symptom criteria to substance addiction. The main diagnostic feature is the use of my device compromising or negatively affecting all the domains of my life. Are my relationships suffering? Is my physical health suffering? Are my academics or my work suffering? But typically what we're seeing is the more you're on your device, higher rates of anxiety, depression, all the negative mental health metrics seems to spike and correlate with, people that have an unhealthy relationship with their device. And social media in particular targets psychologically vulnerable people. The algorithms target the lonely, the depressed, the anxious, and then they send them content that really attacks those vulnerabilities because it increases engagement, but it also increases their psychological unwellness.
Mm. And the particular age cohort who seem to make up most of your patients, I assume they've been on screens since they were very young.
Digital natives. Yeah. They were really either cradle to adolescence. And you could usually tell someone that's been on the screen since they were 2 years old or 3 years old, they act differently. They are, because the screen affects things that we don't often think about. We know that it increases depression and anxiety, but creativity gets hampered, problem solving, cognitive. There's a flat look into their eyes. Oftentimes they've been overstimulated, but they're desensitized. So they're easily bored, easily dysregulated emotionally. You could just tell that they haven't, that their whole lives are devoted to the distraction of the screen. So anytime that they have to sit still without their screen, they're either jumping out of their seats, their eyes are wandering, they're anxious. So picking up a phone is like picking up the cigarettes in an old days. It's the anxiety relieving de-stressor, but it becomes an unhealthy crutch.
Yeah, excuse me. And because I've been doing it since they were two, what's been going on in their brains developmentally?
Well, I think that's what shocked the most people is over the last 10 to 13 years, we have pretty robust and significant brain imaging research. The fMRI research really shows that the brain changes in the same way that it changes from chronic substance addiction. So the main change is that the part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is our executive functioning, it's the part that allows us to not be impulsive, to consequentially think, to really make decisions appropriately. That part of the brain actually shrinks over time. And that was shocking for a lot of people to see that I'm not ingesting a substance. It's just my actual visual experience is compromising that part of my brain, which is really vital to my being a functional and successful adult.
Is there a tipping point past which that damage can't be repaired?
Because of a thing called neuroplasticity, some of these effects can be reversed if a person then gets back into healthy and mindful digital usage. But there are some things like attention, are the doubling of ADHD over the last 10 to 15 years, I think, is a direct result of screen time. Attention is a developmental window. If you don't develop your ability to attend, to focus, to stay on task at this key windows, usually between the ages of 3 and 8 years old, that window, like language acquisition, if you don't learn a language within a certain developmental window, you're going to be lifelong compromised in language acquisition. And it's the same with screens. If you're stunting a child during the key developmental window, there is a point of no return there.
My word. And describe for us what the treatment program for people. You know, what do they do when they book in?
Yeah, it's a combination of what we would consider traditional evidence-based therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, talk therapy with therapists. But a big part of the treatment, well, first of all, they do a digital detox. They don't have any devices for 4 to 6 weeks. That's usually the amount of time that your brain needs to reset itself, because essentially screen time is a stimulant and it raises dopamine levels and it dysregulates a person neurochemically and emotionally. So we're unplugged for 4 to 6 weeks, traditional psychotherapy, but also a lot of nature immersion, outdoor activities, because we want the person to start experiencing the dopamine high of everyday living, playing basketball, going on a hike in nature, being around other people, having fun and socializing without that depends on the screen. That's a big part of it. And then the third part of it is a lot of our young clients, and it's true with so many teenagers and young adults today, they're going through a crisis of meaning and purpose. They feel empty. They feel lost. They feel despondent. They're having an existential crisis that we used to see when people were 50 or 60 years old. So helping them find a sense of meaning and purpose in their lives is an important part of therapy as well, because that can then keep them away from doom scrolling and losing themselves on digital escapism.
And is that an existential crisis related to the overuse of screens?
Well, yeah, that's the vicious cycle. The more you're on screens, the more the algorithms will target you with. The algorithms, I've come to understand, they target psychological vulnerability. So if they sense, if the profile of the person, the user, is one of self-harm or depression or body image issues, you're going to get bombarded with content that exacerbates that. The algorithm is like a heat-seeking missile that targets psychological vulnerability. So you're going to get more and more content that makes you feel worse and worse about yourself, but yet it increases your engagement. And it's that vicious cycle. The more content I consume, the worse I feel about myself. The worse I feel about myself, the more I want to escape into my screen. And then, of course, there's doom scrolling, where the world is ending in 5 years, you know, nuclear war, global warming, the sky is falling. And that leads people into a more depressed and I want to escape my life through this. Either vicarious experiences through gaming, with a lot of the young men escape through gaming. A lot of the young women tend to escape in social media platforms. So there is a bit of a gender divide in terms of what platforms the younger people are escaping through. But it is interesting to see. There is hope. People can and do get better, but it doesn't spontaneously reverse itself without some proactive intervention.
Yeah. And that initial 4 to 6 weeks, is that very difficult for them? Is there anything you can do to alleviate their agitation? Is there a digital version of methadone?
Right, harm reduction. That's so brilliant that you asked that insightful question. You definitely see a withdrawal. There is a physiological withdrawal, strongest within the first 48 to 72 hours. We've had clients, you know, who've gotten pretty explosive physical. You know, for anybody in your audience that has tried to stop drinking coffee for a couple of days, you know, you can get irritable and squirrely. We'll multiply that by 50. The methadone that we try to use is other engaging activities that keep the client busy, because what you don't want to do is take away the device and have the client staring at the wall and being just jumping out of their skin. So, okay, no device, but we're going to go on a hike. We're going to do something exciting. We're going to do something engaging and keep your dopamine. I call it dopamine replacement therapy. We're going to replace your digital dopamine with something more healthy, more collective with other people. Sports, nature is a big one. And once we get past that first 72-hour window, then the client typically not only calms down, but you also see them landing back into their eyes. So you look into their eyes and now there's someone there again, because a lot of our clients come in and they're not fully present. Some of my clients have come in borderline catatonic. They've been overstimulated, yet they seem sedated at the same time. And so you'll see the spark go back into their eyes after about 2 or 3 days. Usually by about a week into the detox, you'll see them laughing again. You'll see them having, normalized interactions again. And that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. At the end of the therapy, what's the aim? Is it to allow them back onto screens, but be a bit more mindful of how they use them, or perhaps not certain areas not to use them at all?
Yeah, that's the challenge with any kind of tech addiction treatment, because, I was an addiction psychologist for 30 years and, treating heroin addiction and cocaine addiction was relatively easy because you can essentially live a healthy life abstinent from substances. But how do you live? You can't really live screen abstinent in 21st century world. And so, so it's similar to an eating disorder in that sense, because somebody that has an eating disorder has to develop a healthy relationship with food, and they can't be food abstinent per se. So what we talk about is we create a digital reentry plan where a client identifies what their digital, so we talk about digital vegetables versus digital candy. What's a healthy use of your device? A Zoom call with grandma is a healthy use of your device. Digital, the empty calories of digital candy that are potentially toxic could be gaming or pornography or online gaming, and those are to be avoided. Whatever your digital drug of choice was, that's the third rail that you're not supposed to touch. But you can do other screen experiences that we've identified as being healthier, and so that becomes the plan moving forward. The plan moving forward is you can do this, but not that. Mindful digital usage on your device, where you do avoid certain platforms. If pornography was your thing, you don't go there. If gaming was your thing, you don't go there, but you do other things.
Yeah.
So that's how we try to manage it moving forward.
Given your experience working in this area, Nicholas, and young brains aren't really fully formed, as far as I understand, until the mid-20s, is there a safe age to start using a screen?
Well, I think we're all impacted. I don't know how you are. I'm of a certain age. We're all impacted. My attention span isn't what it used to be 20 years ago before I got, all of us became swallowed up by screens. I like to say that as we've become mad for our devices have been driving us mad. But we're all impacted. But those of us of a certain age have already, as you mentioned, developed prefrontal cortex. So we're less impacted, even though my attention span might be compromised or somebody might be have an unhealthy devotion to their social media platforms. But the younger you are, the more vulnerable you are to some of these impacts. So there's no age that you become immune to screen impacts, but there are certain, if you're past a certain age, we have had clients in our treatment program that were in their 50s. We had one 62-year-old. So it's not as if you're immune, but you're less vulnerable to some of these effects. The older you are, the more you've lived a life, the more your brain has developed.
Yeah. No, it just in certain countries, in Australia, as you're probably aware, they brought in a rule about no social media if you're 16 or young, or until you're 16, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Would you support those kind of measures?
Well, I've testified. I've been a consultant for U.S. Congress. They're doing a Kids Online Safety Act. I've testified in several states to remove social media and screens in schools K-12, because I think the number one message to parents is delay, delay, delay. The longer you can delay especially the phone, this individualized screen, having a desktop computer, learning how to use a computer when you're 12, 13. But we in the United States, we have a movement called wait until eighth grade, where the young person is 13. And so at least waiting until you're 13, but I agree with the 16-year-old ban, because look, we know that Sergey Brin and Larry Page, the founders of Google, were Montessori students that never had a device until they were late adolescents. We know that Jeff Bezos was a Montessori student, never had a device. We know that Steve Jobs didn't allow his own family to use their own. He didn't get high in his own supply, nor did his family. So the tech moguls understand the negative impact developmentally on screens. So they don't allow their families and kids or and Nord themselves were on screens. And what happens when you delay screen time for your child, their brains develop normally. You develop your cognitive abilities, your creativity, your interpersonal socialization. All those things develop in a healthy way. What gets underestimated is how it saps creativity. If you're a child that's gaming and these visual platforms that are so overwhelming, digital overload, you don't develop your neurosynaptic pathways of creativity. So when I work with somebody that's been on the device since they were 2 years old, they can't draw a picture, they can't write a poem. Their innate sense of intrinsic creativity never developed because the visual imagery was created for them. Their imagination was outsourced to a gaming platform. And that's probably one of the most tragic things that I've seen. These profoundly bored, non-creative young people that are just living to be stimulated. Stimulate me, give me some video content, give me a TikTok video that is 6 seconds long that can tickle my dopamine, but I can't sit and write a poem about life. That part is very sad.
And would that affect, to interrupt, Nick, would that affect the ability to read in the sense that when, you know, you're young and you're learning to read and the words are helping you create pictures in your own mind of what the characters are like and what the situations are like?
So interesting that you say that. So just about a year and a half ago, I realized how significant what you just mentioned is in terms of reading. I was facilitating a group with about 8 young college-age men who are all very bright, by the way. Typically, they tend to be pretty nerdy and bright young men and women. But in this group, it was an all-male group. And we were reading a passage. And the one young man said to me, "You know, Dr. Cardaris, when I read, I can read. I can sound out the words. I understand what the words mean. But it's like it's as if the movie screen in my mind doesn't work. I can't visualize when I read." And I said, "Who else in the group has that problem?" And every hand went up. And I said, let me understand this. When all of you read, you don't translate those words into visual images in your mind?" And they're like, "No, we can't visualize." And I thought that was profoundly sad and shocking. And when you think about it, their ability to create that movie screen in their minds that we all have, because let me back up. The best thing that you could do for a child is to allow them to be bored, because when the child is bored, they use their active imagination to play make-believe. They start creating the creativity and imaginative things, and they start using their own mind to visualize. Our kids that have had a screen stuck in front of their faces since they were 18 months old, that never developed. So unless the visualization is pre-baked for them and put in front of a screen, unfortunately, I've been saddened and shocked to see that that ability becomes not, it doesn't atrophy, it never developed.
My word. Nicholas, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Nicholas Cardaris there, CEO of Amiga Recovery, a tech addiction center. Right, a few comments on that. Very sad to see a child in the playground who is not on a device, but is being ignored by the parent who is, says one texter. Yeah, because as you said there, I mean, it's probably, you know, the kids who grew up with the digital natives, they're more vulnerable to this, but that doesn't mean any other age isn't vulnerable to it. Someone else says, "I left social media, Facebook and Instagram, about 6 years ago. Do not miss it one bit. Great for my mental health as I spend more time reading books, exercising and taking up new hobbies, painting, drawing, playing guitar and speaking to friends and family." Someone else says, "There's definitely an increasing addiction to technology. I find it not only among the younger generation, but also people of all ages. Digital addiction is so corrosive." Someone's wondering about what action would that doctor advise when taking to intervene with a 7-year-old child. We're concerned about his screen time. Well, you heard what he said there about all the possible long-term effects of that, that literally that 7-year-old's brain won't form properly, and there is a danger that it'll reach a point where that damage could never be reversed. If you're that concerned about it, if you're the parent, take it off them, no matter how much they can complain about it. And Anya says, "The Gaeltacht is the perfect teen digital detox."
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.